Hello and welcome to the first ever Gear for Music podcast. Why are we doing a podcast, you might ask? Well, it's because today we're down in London at the podcast show, the first ever podcast show of its kind. And also, if you didn't know, my name is Jordan and I am joined today by an amazing guest, which is Jack Dury.
Hello.
From Shore. So Jack, yeah, talk us through what the podcast show is, if you can, please, so they can understand.
It does what it says on the tin. It's a show that is entirely devoted to podcasting, which is interesting. So there's lots of people exhibiting here that you wouldn't normally see, which I'm finding quite interesting. Like Spotify's here, which is quite cool.
Yeah, they've got a cool little booth.
Yeah, it's a it's a big stand. Yeah, you've got a tote bag.
Yeah, I got a nice little tote bag where you can customise. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then there's some, like, you know, interesting podcasting type people here. I think Louis Theroux was here this morning.
Yeah, I bumped into him earlier.
Oh,
I walked past him. I was like, oh, it's Louis Theroux.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. And Global Radio here. So it's an interesting one. We've actually been working on this show for 3 years now. And obviously the pandemic kind of ruined lots of things. One of them was the podcast show. So it's really nice to actually be here and see our booth and see it working and kind of, you know, actually get somewhere with it and not be talking about it.
Yeah, so what you can see here where we currently are, well, if you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see. If you're listening on the blog, then you might not be able to. But if you can see, we're in like this little soundproof booth that Shore have built specifically for the podcast with a nice podcast setup. And you can kind of see through the window, everyone outside, the whole thing going on. And yeah, it's just a really cool time. You've had quite a few different people coming in today, including us.
Yeah, tons. And it's a different type of user, actually. Obviously, these people are buying a lot of our stuff or whatever. But there's lots of, I don't know, I guess misinformation and lots of confusion. I think YouTube is littered with lots of people who are talking about SM7Bs and compression and how to do stuff. And it's like there's all this information. So a lot of the people that are coming to our booth today, it's just a really good opportunity to like set the record straight on a few things and, you know, fill in some gaps in their knowledge where there might be. And
Because people might be fully aware of this mic that we're currently talking in, which is the 7B. But obviously you guys have the other ones as well, so the MV7 and the MV7X, which are kind of built off these amazing microphones, are kind of inspired by them almost. I mean, how have you found the response to the MV7 over the the MV7 over the 7B? Like, what have people kind of said about it?
It's interesting. It does a very different job, I think. And we kind of knew that when we built it. Like, it wasn't ever designed to be an SM7B replacement completely. SM7B is a bit of a funny one. It was never really designed to be a podcast microphone. We released that in the 70s. And its original purpose was we wanted to have a way of getting rid of big condenser microphones in broadcast studios. That was what we wanted it to do. We thought we'll just go and take that market because we're really, really good at dynamic microphones. We can make a very, very good version of a dynamic microphone. So let's go into that market. And unfortunately, it didn't really go very well for us. Since
to start with.
SM7B. Yeah, to start with. Yeah. Rubbish. And we nearly discontinued the product. Like, it was that bad. And podcasting just went nuts for it. But what started to happen was, you know, people were buying 7Bs and then plugging them into, I guess, entry-level audio interfaces with preamps that aren't of a, you know, good enough spec to drive them properly.
Yeah.
So, and of course, the solution to that is you get a FET head or something like that, a cloud lifter, in order to bring the gain up to where it needs to be, and suddenly it transforms, right? And it sounds great. But MV7 came out of trying to address the user below that level, because if you go down that road, like, by the time you've had the 7B and the FET head and, like, you know, a decent audio interface for it, it's like a grand, right?
It's quite a lot.
Way too much money. So MV7, the task was build something that sounds like a 7B, right? Okay, is of that kind of family, that dynamic sort of focus sound, but is much more accessible in terms of price. And also ticks all the boxes for the modern needs of podcasting, right? So it's got the USB audio interface built in. It's got XLR built in as well, so you can use both at the same time. It's got that dynamic sound profile as well, so it sounds very much like you'd expect it to sound. And because, of course, we've got the interface built in, we can also do some processing. And, and this is something that Shaw's gotten very, very good at over the last few years, is writing really, really good DSP for stuff. So, like, the denoise in MV7 is really nice. It's got a nice compressor. It's got a nice EQ and kind of ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, a friend of mine used an MV7 just to record some vocals, just like for a track. And he said, He loved like the compressor on it. He was like, that compressor's like, it's so easy to use. Like, that's instead of like using, because he has a 7B, he was like, instead of using a 7B and then using plugins and stuff in like Pro Tools and stuff, he was like, just the compressor on this, on the MV7 was just great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just thought it was really cool. So with mentioned how kind of like when you're starting to plan the podcast show, obviously it was cancelled a few times because of COVID and the lockdowns and everything. How do you think podcasting in general has changed since kind of pre-lockdown and now post-lockdown? So obviously there's kind of like a podcast boom at the start of lockdown. How do you think that's kind of changed, and what do you think will change?
This is interesting, isn't it? Because I think actually the podcast boom was happening anyway, right? So podcasts have been on the rise for years and years and years and years. And I, you know, the podcast show was planned before the pandemic. Mm. So obviously the market was growing.
Yeah, it was big.
What we will never know the answer to is, you know, to what extent did the pandemic accelerate that? Yeah.
Would it have been this big kind of thing? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, though, like, I'll put a limit. I think it probably would have been. Mm. I think the podcast boom was always going to happen. And then the logical step after that is, you know, you start looking at streaming, you start looking at video casting, and, you know, it's all the same kind of gear. But I don't know, as a medium of communication, I think it's become very, very useful for lots of brands and people. And obviously lots of people have found ways to make money out of it, which is also really, really good.
Yeah, I feel like everyone kind of has a podcast now. And so do we.
Well, this is we're examples of exactly this, right? We're sitting down doing a podcast. It's an easy thing to do. Mm. I think people like the format. I think it's less formal than a TV interview or a magazine interview or something of that nature.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm a bit of an outlier, and this is my opinion. This is not your opinion. Yeah, but I think the podcast boom was always going to be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I find myself in recent years like listening more and more to podcasts, obviously things I'm interested in, like music and whatnot. But yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, next year podcast show might even be bigger than what it currently is,
potentially. I mean, this is the second part of your question. What's going to happen next? I have absolutely no idea. It's weird because on paper podcasting is about as old-fashioned as it gets.
It's just radio, isn't it? Really,
it's old-fashioned radio.
Yeah,
it's like talking radio, and the gear is old-fashioned radio gear.
Yeah,
right?
This is from, what would you say, 1973,
I think we released it. Right? So it's bizarre that it's become so popular. Yeah. I don't know, I think people cleverer than me will be able to look at it, what it's doing now, and assess some numbers and say, yeah, okay, video cast is going to do this or whatever. Yeah. I don't think it goes away. I think that it evolves, and I'm excited to see what that looks like, definitely.
Yeah, I think the kind of evolution of it as well, you know, I watch a lot of podcasts, which I guess when you say that, it sounds odd, because watching a podcast, it's a podcast, so you mustn't be listening to it. But like, I put it on YouTube, like, we filmed today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I watch a lot of podcasts. So I guess that's kind of the next step of it, isn't it? Like, evolution.
See, I'm not a podcast watcher.
Oh, really?
I could do. I tried to watch. One of my favorite podcasts is Newscast from the BBC.
Yeah.
Because I quite like Adam Fleming's voice. Mm-hmm. And they've got a video cast now, so I tried to watch it and I hated it. It was like all of the mystique had just gone.
Yeah,
I was I don't know. So it doesn't speak to me, which I guess is quite weird. Mm. You know.
Yeah. I guess it's because like, when you're listening to a podcast, I guess you're almost imagining like what the room looks like and what the guy like you listen to might look like you've never seen him before.
I'm also always doing about 7 other things.
Yeah, so you can't just sit there and like, you need to go in. I guess that's a good thing about podcasts as well. Like, obviously in the car, you go in places on the train or whatever, it's just so consumable. And I guess that's why now it's just so popular at the moment.
I don't think I've ever said this out loud or really thought about it, but it's like, if I have to do a task that I know I will hate, I will treat myself to a podcast.
Yeah, at the same time.
Right? So washing up.
Yeah.
Podcast. And that somehow makes it bearable. Mm. I don't have an ironing board, but if I did, I would definitely podcast. You know what? It makes me want to get an ironing board. Like, my brain now goes, oh, that's an opportunity to listen to the podcast. Yeah. I start ironing my stuff.
Yeah, fair. might be worth a try.
Yeah, I know, right?
So with, you said about kind of the evolution, like obviously the MV7 kind of came as an entry level kind of price point for the 7B. Mm-hmm. What about, so we mentioned about the FET heads and whatnot. Mm-hmm. What about, you know, it's just speculation, I'm just kind of asking a question. What about in the future there might be an SM7C?
what, like some kind of active version?
I mean, because I've seen people that like mod the SM7 and they add like little dip switches and stuff to the back that kind of adds phantom power to it or something.
Why we haven't done it, I don't, like, complete transparency, it blows my mind. I don't quite understand why we haven't done either. It seems obvious. What I will say is the way that Shure develops its products is not quite like any other manufacturer that I've worked for or with, right? So when Sydney Shure wrote the process for how all this stuff works, it's like most manufacturers have an element of R&D and an element of testing and, you know, all the rest of it. Shure's is like ridiculous. Yeah. We will develop products for years and years and years and years. And there's a whole department in Chicago whose job it is to break stuff.
Fair. That's cool.
And I'm not even sure if there's like a kind of checklist process. Like basically they'll get to a point with stuff where it's like, okay, that's hard enough to break that we can call it Shure products, right? Yeah. Enough boxes have been ticked. Consequently, it's very, very expensive for us to develop products. Like, and I say that as a badge of pride, actually, because most manufacturers are searching for margin wherever they can find it.
Yeah.
And I guess Shure, to some extent, has to do the same thing. It's a business. It does not try and find that margin in the development process. Mm-hmm. Any product we bring to market is as best as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
So the fact that some form of active SM7 hasn't come out yet, I think is testament to the fact that just us developing stuff takes an awfully long time. MV7, when it was first pitched, was kind of designed to answer that question a little bit. And I think there's also a sense of like, you know, this became the Podcasting Mic by accident.
Yeah.
In terms of its charter at Shure, SM7B is still a broadcast microphone. It doesn't need to be active, right? You're going to use it with a preamp. So sometimes it takes a while for the reality to penetrate the membrane of like, you know, what's actually going on at Shure. And again, I say that in full like positivity,
because
it means that we make great products as a result.
Yeah, I mean, they are. Like, I've got 7B myself and I love it. It sounds great for everything and anything.
Yeah.
They're really cool products to have a go with. Like I said, the one I saw where the guy kind of added the mod to the back, it still sounded like a 7B.
Yeah.
I guess it's got rid of the need for a cloud lifter or whatever. But, you know, if you get a good enough interface, like I've got a Universal Audio. And like it works perfectly. What else have we got? Have you guys got planned for this this podcast show? I know you said you had a couple of talks. How were they?
We were doing some talks. Yeah, we're doing. We called it Sound Extraordinary with Shure, because our tagline as Shure is Sound Extraordinary. And when we sat down to try and think about what we call it, that was about as creative as we could get with it. I'm terrible at naming things, as is Marco and the other Marco at Shure as well. It's like if you're just starting podcasting, or if you've been podcasting for a bit and, you know, you are that person who's gone down the rabbit hole of the internet and read about compression and EQ and Fetheads and SM7Bs and, you know, don't quite have all the information. I've tried to design it as much as possible as like a kind of myth-busting session and just, you know, here are some facts.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of that, actually, I didn't plan to say it, but it kind of came out naturally today. People just care too much.
About what? About audio quality or about...
Not about audio quality, but like you can, if you're not careful, you can spend hours in an EQ, right?
Definitely.
And that's time that you, if you're making podcasts, you'll want to spend promoting and writing and, you know, earning money out of it. If you're spending any more than 5 minutes in an EQ for a podcast, you're doing it wrong.
It's too much.
Right? You're thinking about it too much.
So would you say, with podcasting, would you say that audio quality is important, or is it not as important as some people might, like you said, some people maybe take it a bit too far, because you could have the best sounding podcast in the world, but if your content's not there, it doesn't really translate and you won't get any listeners. Or but then vice versa, if you've got really bad audio quality, then I'm gonna switch off and be like, I can't, this is too hard to listen to.
So there's always a kind of meeting of both. It has to be good enough. I personally don't believe that you have to do too much work on a speech-based piece of audio to get it where it needs to be. Like, really, if you've picked the right product, it doesn't even have to be a Shure product at this point, just get the right product for the right job with the right interface and record it properly, and you don't need to touch any processing, and you're probably half of the way there, right? I do think that, like, the kind of nice radio sound or whatever, if you can learn a little bit about EQ and compression, and by that I mean literally find out where the low-pass filter is, where the high-pass filter button is, and then and, like, you know, just learn where the threshold knob is on the compressor and get that in the right place. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to do that, really. Like, you know, you just call up a preset.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of, like, Logic and Pro Tools and stuff, they've got presets for, like, speech and podcasts and stuff in now, where you just click it and you're good to go.
So I think you can worry about this stuff too much, definitely, but a little bit of work in it is going to improve things massively.
Yeah.
I think one that has come up a lot today is compression and the importance of it. And I, you know, it's really difficult and exhausting to listen to audio where there's just this crazy dynamic range.
Yeah.
And it's really quiet and then it's really loud. Mm-hmm. Right?
Because then you just keep, you're fighting with the volume a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah. And also your brain's just working really hard, right? To try and dial in its own compression algorithm that it has. So just putting a compressor in the chain makes life an awful lot easier, right?
And they got presets as well.
Well, they got presets as well, And the other one that's worth having, I think, is a denoiser.
Yes.
So if you get nothing else from my book, it's denoise, compression, export, done. Yeah. So yeah, to answer your question, now audio quality is very, very important. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably important in everything, really, including videos. But I think my kind of philosophy on it at the moment is you don't have to know that much or work that hard to get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, if you're like in the compressor for hours and in the EQ for hours, it's probably not going to sound very good.
Yeah, it's going to sound weird when it comes
when
out.
When you're at your 17th notch filter at like 16K.
Just pushing like loads of random bits up. Like, oh, there's a little bit of kind of... It's like, nah, I'll cut that. It's like, where? Just leave it alone.
Turn it off. Walk away. Do something else.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, amazing. So hopefully, if whoever's listening, you've kind of found something useful that we've kind of spoke about here today. It was just kind of, you know, if you're getting into a podcast, or if you're starting a podcast, or if you're just into podcasting, hopefully you found something here today that we've spoken about. So quickly, kind of before we kind of wrap this up, what's some advice you would give to a podcaster that's starting out? Kind of like maybe five easy tips. Like something you said, just five easy tips for someone.
I need five.
Two.
Really?
One.
No, but I say that in terms of, like, you know, it's actually really straightforward. I think to get better at this from an audio perspective, from an audio production perspective, the best tip is just to keep making podcasts, right? Just keep doing it. Keep doing the thing. There is no book that you can read or YouTube video that you can watch that will suddenly make you an excellent producer.
Yeah.
You just got to put the 10,000 hours in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only 10,000 hours. You've got to put the time in, keep doing it, and you'll get better. Somebody asked a question today, like, at what point do I need to move on to a bigger and better setup? And I don't think that there's an answer to that question either.
Mm.
I think that, you know, if you're getting complaints about your audio, then maybe pick up the phone to a nice company like Gear for Music and have a conversation with somebody about it.
And you can get these lovely Shure mics from us. Do you know what I mean?
But even these might not be the right thing for you.
Yeah, maybe you might need something else, something a bit cheaper, or something that sounds a bit different.
100%. But I just think, you know, my tips are, don't worry too much about it. Just keep making stuff, and you know you'll get 85% of the way there without putting too much effort in. The secret sauce, the really cool stuff, it is in compression and EQ. But don't worry too much about it.
Yeah,
life goes on.
Yeah, and then maybe when it comes down to it, would you say content is probably
content is key?
Content is key, of course.
You've got rubbish content.
No one's going to listen. Just silence, just for 20 minutes straight.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Thank you so much. If you guys have enjoyed this, please let us know. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. And if you want to see another podcast from us, just let us know. And hopefully we'll do this again soon. So thank you. See you later. Bye.